Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Good afternoon and welcome to Social Distance Central. Brendan Batchelor with you. Joined today by Jamie Dodd, who's in for the vacationing Bick Nizar all week. And first of all, Jamie, a belated happy Father's Day. How was your weekend?
It was fantastic. Yeah, it was a good Father's Day. Got the traditional sleep in on Sunday, then had some quality family time. It was pretty much exactly what I was looking for. And hey, we even got a very small sampling of sports back that I was able to enjoy. A little soccer, a little golf. So couldn't ask for much more on Father's Day this year.
Yeah, I was enjoying watching some of the Premier League return over the weekend as well. One thing, and I put it out on Twitter yesterday or the day before, I can't remember, but one of the options that you had on the DAZN package to watch the Premier League, at least for the Liverpool-Everton game, was you could choose whether you wanted to watch a feed with piped-in crowd noise or without. And, you know, to this point, we've seen games broadcast on television where you're only getting it on one channel, so you don't really have the option to have that choice. That was just a little thing for the weekend that I liked, and it got me thinking about whether that's something that could be applied to the NHL return to play, where you know, we at Sportsnet have, you know, a variety of different channels, whether it's Sportsnet 1, 360, Pacific, West, etc., whether you could set it up so that if you're watching one of the playoff games, one channel has piped in crowd noise and one doesn't, so you could pick your poison in that regard.
Well, and that's one of the, you know, if we're trying to look on the bright side of everything that's happened over the last few months, that could be a small one that, hey, we've got a little chance to get funky here, to try out some experimental things. I definitely think there'll be something like that. And, you know, it's funny because I was just watching the NBC broadcast of Liverpool and Everton, and I believe they just had as standard, they had some artificial crowd noise. And, you know, I've been kind of on the fence about that and how I would feel about it, but I found it really inobtrusive and kind of enjoyable to have. Now, in the context of an NHL playoff game where we're used to the buildings being so loud and so raucous in that environment, it might feel a little weirder to hear all that noise without anyone in the stands. But at least for soccer, it's like, yeah, I'm here for it. Bring in the fake crowd noise. It worked for me.
Well, and so for some of the games I've watched, the quality of the fake crowd noise has been, you know, to varying degrees. So you're right. I thought it was pretty good for the Liverpool match over the weekend, but I can't remember what game it was. It was one of the very first games when the Premier League came back. And, you know, they're trying to do it so that if an exciting play happens, you hear the crowd react. But there was like a relatively routine shot from outside the box and the keeper made a save and held it. And then there was like a half second delay. And then whoever was running the crowd noise hit whatever the button would be for like the equivalent of like a 92nd minute winning goal, where like the entire stadium completely erupted for what was a routine save. So certainly there are some kinks that can be worked out in that. But it'll be interesting because hockey's very different, right? Like in soccer, you've got fans chanting. You've got that constant level of noise in the background. Whereas hockey, things go up and down in reaction to what's happening on the ice. So if you want to do that for the NHL, then there's got to be someone who's really tapped into what's happening in the game, controlling the noise that goes around.
Well, and there's so many more points of big cheers, whether it's a big hit or a big save, or even, you know, then you have the more subtle, like an ooh or an ah when Quinn Hughes does a great dangle. Are you going to be piping those noises in for that moment? So I definitely think it's trickier to do it in hockey. And to your point, It's going to get weird. We've all but gotten used to a little bit of weirdness in our lives over the last few months. And whenever these broadcasts do return, there's going to be some weird things about them because this is new to everyone. And I think we can figure out a way to, you know, enhance the broadcast with a little bit of extra audio. But you're right. And I think that's a good reminder, is there's going to be some mix-ups along the way because it's completely new to all of us.
Well, yeah, we were joking on the show last week, like, are you going to pipe in that Duncan Keith gets booed every time he touches the puck?
Because, exactly, yeah.
You know, that's certainly something that we see in Vancouver. And, you know, you go to any NHL arena and there are certain players that they don't like in certain markets for whatever reason. So that'll be interesting to see. But on the topic of the NHL return to play, Elliot Friedman reporting about 20 minutes ago that it looks like the league and the Players Association have come to a tentative agreement on extending the player contracts that were going to expire on June 30th, coming up here pretty quickly. It looks like that date is going to be bumped to October the 31st. That's pending official approval of a return to play plan through phases 3 and 4, etc. But, you know, the good news is this appears to be another small step towards hockey returning, that they've come to an agreement on when these contracts are going to be moved to.
Yeah, and it's really no surprise. I mean, that is the basic thing that needed to happen. And there's really no reason for there to be a big dispute over that between the two sides. So no surprise, but yeah, every little piece of information we get like that is a good sign towards the NHL eventually getting back. And I think this week, maybe more than any other week we've seen so far, could be the critical week for the NHL if they are going to get back and play some games this season, because we know, and we're going to talk about it a little bit here, but we know the Hub City decision could be coming this week. And from everything we're hearing, the phase 3 and 4 negotiations are really kicking into high gear. Also negotiations about a potential CBA extension. So if they're able to have a productive week here and really settle some of these issues, then I think we can really be optimistic about, hey, we might actually get to see the Stanley Cup playoffs this season. Because I think some of the things that happened over the weekend and on Friday, it was a good reminder that, okay, yeah, just because they decided on the format, there's still a lot of steps that need to happen before the NHL actually gets back on the ice. And we saw that with some of the Tampa Bay Lightning players testing positive as a result of, well, one, being in Florida, but also getting back on the ice with each other. So there's still a lot that needs to happen, and hopefully they're able to sort out all of these other issues this week, because as I said, this is kind of shaping up to be the key week for the league.
And Chris Johnston tweeting mere seconds ago as well that effective tomorrow, the NHL is going to allow the phase 2 groups to be expanded to 12 players for on-ice sessions from 6. And, you know, there's an interesting, you know, parallel here, or it's at opposite ends of the spectrum, where on Friday we were talking about the fact that the Tampa Bay Lightning had to close their facility because they had 5 people test positive for COVID-19. But it's very clear from, you know, the bits of news that have trickled out over the weekend, whether it's about the hub cities or the phases, that the NHL, you know, is not going to be deterred by a few of their players testing positive. And it'll be really interesting to see how public perception goes from here, because, you know, Bick and I were in on the program on Friday and we ran a poll question asking, you know, has your opinion about whether they should play change, because we find out that, you know, all these Tampa Bay Lightning players and Austin Matthews have now tested positive for COVID-19. And, you know, we gave 3 options. One was, yes, my opinion has changed, which means I would assume that you're going from being in favor of them returning to play to now not being in favor. And then the other 2 options were, no, I always wanted them to play, or no, I never wanted them to play. And if you, you know, combine the people that said, yes, my opinion has changed, and the people that said, no, I never wanted them to play, that was over 60% of the vote. So that's a decent majority of people right now, at least, that responded to our poll question on Friday, that are not in favor of the NHL returning because of, you know, the issues potentially with players contracting this virus.
Well, and I'll admit, my kind of knee-jerk reaction was pretty similar. When that news started to drop on Friday, it's, you know, it was pretty depressing, because you look at it and you say, okay, if we already are getting these numbers and we haven't even, you know, kicked into phase 3 or phase 4 or had all these teams gather together, is there really any way they can go ahead? And, you know, the NHL hasn't necessarily commented directly on it, but what we've heard from insiders like CJ and like Friedman is the NHL's point of view is, in phase 2, yes, it's only small groups, but the players also aren't being monitored. They aren't being tested regularly. They're free to kind of go about their business. And when you have players like the Tampa Bay Lightning in a state like Florida, or like Austin Matthews in Arizona, both states that are having a huge surge in cases, yeah, of course you're going to get some positive tests. And the NHL's point is, look, as we move into phase 3 and 4, and actually we start introducing more controls into the situation as we bring players into the bubble. If we're able to do that safely, then once they're in the bubble and once they're potentially in a location like, say, Vancouver, not to get ahead of ourselves, but at that point, we'll actually be able to control their exposure to the virus much more easily than we are at this stage. And I do think there's something to that argument. I'm not saying it's a slam dunk that you don't have to be concerned about it. Of course you do. But what Chris Johnson just reported minutes ago, that, hey, they're going right ahead with expanding these skating sessions, allowing up to 12 players on the ice. Clearly the NHL does have some confidence that this is not a fatal event for their return to play plan, that they will still be able to go ahead with what they're planning.
Well, and in the grand scheme of things as well, we expected there to be positive tests. Like, if you were coming into this thinking that all NHL players would be able to come in and nobody would have positive tests, that's, you know, we've seen the numbers from, you know, as you point out, Tampa or Florida in general, that had some of the worst numbers we've seen in North America over the weekend and Friday as well, that, you know, it was going to happen. Where the NHL will be tested is their ability to limit the spread, you know, how thorough their testing is. Are they able to make sure that it doesn't impact like half of an entire team? Can they get people isolated quickly enough if and when it happens? And it's a good point as well that once they get into those bubbles, theoretically, they're separated from the public. The chance of them, you know, contracting COVID-19 would be very limited at that point. We do welcome your input into the show. Text us at 650-650 or reach out on Twitter at Batch Hockey, at Jamie Dodd, at Sportsnet 650. And this kind of dovetails into the conversation around hub cities quite nicely, because we've been hearing, and our own Satyar Shah reported it a couple of days ago, that Vancouver is now starting to pick up steam as being one of these hub cities. And when you look at some of the breakouts of COVID in areas in the United States, you certainly understand why, from a public health perspective, the NHL would be looking at coming north of the border and potentially here to Vancouver.
Well, no doubt about it. I mean, look at the situation that the NBA and MLS find themselves in, having put all of their eggs in the Florida basket and staring down a potentially disastrous uptick in cases in that state. And they really don't have another option. They're kind of married to those plans in Orlando. And the NHL, you know, through sheer dumb luck, in a sense, is almost, you could argue, it's the best situated of any of the major leagues in North America, just because they do have the option to come to Canada to play. And you look around North America, you know, and I know there's still a very healthy debate here in BC and in Vancouver about whether it's even desirable for us to be a hub city and host the NHL. But strictly from the NHL's perspective, I mean, is there anywhere else you would rather do business right now than BC? Like, based on how we've handled it, and I'm very proud of our province and our city of how we've been able to handle it. But of course, that makes us attractive to the NHL. When you see what's happening and in, you know, Nevada, it hasn't been hit as hard as a state like Arizona or Florida, but it's seeing a big swing in cases as well. So do you really want to gamble, sorry, pardon the pun, but on going to Las Vegas when you have potentially much safer options in Vancouver and Edmonton and Toronto? So the more I think about it, the more I start thinking, you know, the NHL might even go ahead and just put both cities in north of the border, because you think about how easy it would be for an outbreak amongst the players to get so bad that you have to shut down the season again, and that would just be a complete disaster. And the place where that has the least chance of happening is in Canada.
Yeah, it certainly is. And you know, we had Emily Kaplan on the show on Friday, and she said the same thing, that you have to wonder now if the NHL does look at coming north of the border for both of the hub cities. Everything we're hearing still seems like they want to be tied to Vegas, but at the same time, and here's a text in from Duncan saying, not sure if the casinos are opening up in Las Vegas. If so, Vancouver looks like a good option. Yeah, the casinos are open in Las Vegas, and I don't know if you've seen some of the images online, but you know, I've said it before, it feels like a different planet when you see these, all these people crowded into casinos. And, you know, again, we've done a great job here in BC of limiting the spread of this disease, but you're not seeing public gatherings really at all. Like, you know, you go to a restaurant and it's somewhat full, and that feels like a lot of people right now. To see these images out of Vegas of, you know, casinos who they have put measures in place. But that said, it does look, you know, something close to business as usual. And you have to wonder whether the, you know, as much as the NHL seems to want to go to Vegas, whether they're going to have to pull back from that. But we want to hear from you as well. Again, 650-650 is the text line, or you can reach us on Twitter. Do you want the NHL picking Vancouver as a hub city? And, you know, there are pros and cons to becoming a hub city. Obviously, the major con would be that you have all these people coming in from out of the country. You risk having some sort of breakout locally, although I believe the chances of that would be quite limited because all these guys are going into a bubble anyway. So they're, it's not like they're going to be, you know, walking down Robson Street or milling with the general public. And there are some economic benefits to small businesses locally, whether it be hotels, restaurants, you know, charter bus companies that will have been hit economically by this pandemic, that certainly the NHL coming here and bringing, you know, 12 teams into the city would help boost some of those businesses a little bit.
Yeah, it's a situation where I very much understand the people who are nervous about the NHL potentially coming here. I kind of think that the pros have maybe been a little overstated and the cons have also been a little overstated. Like, yes, it will help the restaurant industry and the hotel industry, and those have been hit very hard. I don't want to downplay that. I mean, especially if you happen to work in that industry, this could be a huge deal for you. But I'm also not sure that it's going to be, you know, the kind of thing that's really going to supercharge our economy and get it right back to where it was before the coronavirus outbreak. But, you know, having said that, I completely agree with you, Batch, that yes, there is a risk, but I do not think it is a huge risk. And I think we have shown the ability in this province to, if something did go wrong, we can handle it and we can react and we can get it sorted out safely. And that, for me, the reason is that I'm fine with Vancouver being a hub city is, look, if Dr. Bonnie Henry says it's fine, like, if there's one thing I've learned over the last 3 months, it's trust her and, you know, listen to what she has to say. And when I hear her say, listen, the NHL's plan, it exceeds my expectations, it exceeds my requirements for how we can do this safely, I am very much willing to take her word for it. If she says it's okay, and the rest of our leadership here, who I think have done a very, very good job, if they say, no, we can do this safely and it will benefit us, I'm willing to take them at their word, and I'm willing to host the NHL here. That's really what it comes down to for me.
Well, yeah, and, you know, incredibly selfishly, I want the league to come here because, you know, we haven't heard yet from a media perspective whether people are going to be allowed inside the bubble or if broadcasters are going to be allowed in the ranks to call games. But I can tell you that from our perspective as a station here at Sportsnet 650 and mine personally, if the games are being played here, there's a heck of a lot of a greater chance that I'll be able to actually be there watching them with my own two eyes.
So, yeah, no doubt. And I mean, we talk about, you know, the hotel and the restaurant industry. Yeah, we should admit, of course, our industry as well does stand to benefit in some way. It's obviously not going to look anything like a normal access media situation would look like in the NHL playoffs. But yeah, you could easily, you and Hershey could easily be in the rink calling games together again. And, you know, we might be able to send one or two reporters to games at some point. So yeah, there's absolutely a benefit to us. And yeah, it's a little bit selfish, sure. But
it's
again, like,
selfish, let's be honest.
Yeah, it's a lot selfish. But let's be, again, like I said, if our political leaders were standing up and saying, hey, I don't think this is such a good idea, the fact that I might get to go to a game wouldn't sway me. I'd say, okay, I'm listening to them. It's a bad idea. So I'm just trying to take my cues from the people who have the most information, from the experts. Cause hey man, I talk about hockey for a living. I'm not a medical expert. If they say it's okay, I'm willing to trust them though.
Yeah. And that, you know, for the average fan's perspective, you know, unless you are tied to some of these economies that we're talking about with the hotel industry and the restaurant industry, I can completely understand you saying, you know, we don't want them here. It's a risk that's not worth taking. Wherever they go, I'll still be able to watch the games on TV just like I would be normally, because I'm certainly not going to be able to attend. That makes a ton of sense. But you're right in saying that, you know, when Bonnie Henry comes out and says that she is satisfied with the NHL's plan, then, you know, that's something that should at least set your mind at ease a little bit. And, you know, you alluded to it earlier that, you know, certainly the NHL is lucky to have the situation where they have multiple markets in Canada that they could come to play these games. But I also think the NHL deserves some credit here for waiting, because they could have just, you know, however long ago it was, like a month ago, 5 weeks ago, when they announced the return to play format, they could have picked their two hub cities then. But had they done that, they might be in the exact same scenario the NBA is in, where they put all their eggs in the Florida basket, and now there's, you know, massive COVID numbers coming out of Florida. So to me, the NHL deserves some credit for waiting until closer to the time to make this decision. And we expect that decision to come this week, because now they have all of the available information. So they still can bring, you know, the whole league north of the border if they do deem that to be the safest route forward.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I mean, even with how they're handling the Las Vegas situation right now. Yeah, we know they want to go to Las Vegas, but they haven't announced it yet. And that's looking very smart. They're still in a position where they're giving it as much time as they possibly can. And they can make the decision now based on what Las Vegas looks like this week, rather than having made that decision, you know, based on what it looked like a month ago. Because again, one of the things we've learned in this time is things change really quickly. And a month ago, Las Vegas might have seemed like a great place to go play some hockey. Now, yeah, maybe not so much. So you're absolutely right. The NHL has been very, very cautious throughout this entire process, and it's paying dividends for them. They've kept their options open. We've got some good reaction coming in. 650, 650 is the text message inbox. This is from Ian in Victoria. He says, who cares where they go? They could be in a bubble in Antarctica. My question is, will they create a pay-per-view system to try to make some money? And no, I don't think so, because, you know, one of the reasons they want to get on the ice is to fulfill their obligations to the broadcast partners. So they're trying to create a product so, you know, Rogers Sportsnet and CBC and NBC in the US can show these games. They're not about to, you know, create a paywall and a pay-per-view system just to try to drum up some extra revenue.
No, and you know, we should be clear as well that they stand to gain a lot economically from playing these games. That's why there's a push for this to happen, even though there won't be any gate money from tickets for fans. There's a lot of money tied up in these broadcast agreements on you know, the national TV agreements. And, you know, the NHL has already lost a ton of money, you have to believe, from, you know, the season being cut short and no ticketing for the playoffs and all of those sorts of things. This is a chance for them to not have any money that's tied up in their broadcast deals in jeopardy, to generate some ratings and some excitement around their product at a time of the year when that wouldn't normally be happening, as they'll be playing through the summer. And then, you know, we also have to talk about this from a player's perspective too, where, you know, I've seen some opinions out there that seem to be sort of the bent that this is the evil owners forcing the players to come back and play, and they may not be getting paid for that because it's the playoffs. But the players stand to gain economically from this as well. They wouldn't be entertaining a return to play if they didn't. You know, how much money they can recoup by playing the playoffs is going to impact the salary cap down the road. It's going to impact escrow payments going forward. So there are still plenty of reasons for the players to come back and play right now as well.
Oh, no doubt about it. And, you know, we have started to hear rumblings that maybe they're getting a little concerned about, for example, what happened with the Lightning. But yeah, this is a very different situation than baseball. If you've been following what's been happening with MLB, those sides are just completely at loggerheads, and it seems like they have very different interests at the heart of it. The players and the owners in the NHL, they both want the same thing. They want to get back, and they want to generate as much revenue as possible, because the owners and the players, they split the revenue, and more revenue is good for everyone. Everyone has that goal. Yes, some players might be concerned about safety. I absolutely understand that, and when it eventually gets put to a vote, we'll see how big a contingent that is. But fundamentally, if it is possible to do so safely, the players want to play.
It is Social Distance Central. Brendan Batchelor alongside Jamie Dodd. Still plenty to come. We're going to set up Game of Takes for this week. Jordan from Saskatoon, our winner last week, knocking Bailey Broadbent off the composite throne. And for the debating topic this week, Jordan has chosen, looking back at Tyler Myers and his first season in a Canuck uniform. We'll get into that and much more coming up in a moment in Social Distance Central on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. It is Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650. Brendan Batchelor with you, joined this week by Jamie Dodd, in for the vacationing Bick Nazar. He will be back next week. Going to set up Game of Takes here in just a moment. And in fact, our reigning champion from Game of Takes, Jordan Oxby, also known as Jordan from Saskatoon, writes in on the text line, tying into the Hub City discussion we were having just a few moments ago. He says, if the Canucks play in Vancouver as a Hub City, even without fans in the building, the visual support you would see in the city would help the players know that the whole city is behind them. The energy and buzz that would be vibrating through the city, it would be a hometown advantage for the Canucks, even without the fans at Rogers Arena. And that's an interesting point to bring up here, Jamie, that initially, you know, we had heard from Bill Daly out of the NHL right after they announced the playoff format that ideally they would want to have a situation where no teams are playing in their home city. So they would have one conference, either the Western Conference playing in an Eastern Conference city and the Eastern Conference playing in a Western Conference city, or bring in a building of a team that has been eliminated. And I think that's why the league was seriously looking at Los Angeles as one of the places to go as well. But if we believe what has been reported, which is that it looks like the front runners for Hub Cities right now are Vancouver and Vegas, that means that either the Vegas Golden Knights or the Vancouver Canucks will have some perceived home ice advantage, whether they choose to put the Western Conference in Vegas or in Vancouver, depending. Do you think that that would be a major advantage for that team in a scenario like this, where, you know, Jordan points out there could be shows of support around the city, but at the same time, it's not like if the Western Conference is in Vancouver that the Canucks are going to be living their normal lives, staying in their homes, seeing their families. They're still going to be required to be in the league bubble. So they will be living in a hotel in their home city, and potentially, depending on what the league decides, they could be separated from their families as well.
I do think it would be an advantage. I wouldn't go so far as to say a major advantage. The point about them still being in a hotel is a good one. Now, having said that, we've heard from teams in the past that have chosen during the playoffs to, even at when they're in their home city, to spend some nights in the hotel just to get away from those distractions. But I do think there's something to be said just for being in your familiar environment, for, you know, being in the rhythm of going to Rogers Arena every day. That's where you're comfortable. That's where you know how things are. And yeah, I think it would be an advantage. You know, the stuff about the fans being in the streets and all that and seeing the support around town, it can't hurt, certainly. It would obviously be a drastically reduced home ice advantage, but I don't think it's nothing. I think there is something to be said for, yeah, I'm in my hometown, I'm in where I'm comfortable living. Yes, I'm in a hotel, but I still have, you know, a baseline level of familiarity with everything that's going on around me, which, you know, not that they'll be the only team that can say that if they do indeed get to stay in Vancouver. So an advantage, not a major one, but definitely an advantage of some sort.
Well, and you can think about, too, like some of the subtle things that you may not think about and certainly aren't as prevalent as they used to be with NHL arenas, for the most part, being uniform. But like, you know, the way the puck bounces off the boards in your rink, because you play there half the season, you know, some of the subtle intricacies about, you know, where the bench is located as in relation to other arenas. Like those are things that would give you, again, a minor advantage in the actual games, but it would be there. And so it'll be interesting to see. And another question I think we have to tie into this is, you know, we've been talking about, would you be in favor of Vancouver being a hub city? Does your opinion change about that if the Canucks are not playing in Vancouver? So Vancouver is chosen, let's say hypothetically, Vancouver is chosen as a hub city, but they say, okay, the Eastern Conference is playing in Vancouver and the Western Conference is going to Vegas or wherever the other city is. Are you still in favor of it, knowing that, you know, the Canucks won't physically be here playing here, but, you know, the Leafs and the Bruins and some of those teams will be coming to Vancouver to play their games? I think that's sort of an interesting side effect, I guess you could call it, of how you individually view a return to play setup.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I think for a lot of fans, there's something just, you know, psychologically comforting about the idea of the Canucks playing at Rogers Arena. And beyond it being an advantage, and obviously you can't go to the games, but it's just a pleasant thing that would happen. And I get that, even though it feels a little bit irrational. So, you know, for me, that wouldn't change my perspective. I would still be in favor of Vancouver acting as a hub city. But I also get there's a kind of, you know, like I said, an irrational or romantic part of a fan's brain that says, hey, I want the Canucks at home. I want the Canucks in Vancouver. That's where they belong. I get where they're coming from in that. I just wanted to get into one other text message we got just before the break. This is from MC in North Van. He says, it makes sense to have all the NHL postseason in Canada, but politically, it would be a kick in the teeth of the American government and maybe American fans as well. He says there definitely will be at least one Canadian city. And I understand where you're coming from, MC, but, you know, the thing is, we know this all too well, the NHL is just, it's small potatoes in a lot of senses in the United States. So I don't think it would get that much attention or that much scorn from people in the United States, even hockey fans, if the NHL chose to have both cities in Canada. And again, that's kind of the unique advantage that the NHL is in, you know, straddling the border and having such a strong footprint in Canada, is that they can get away with a decision like that.
Yeah. And, you know, quite frankly, the NHL shouldn't be concerned about how it looks for the American government. They should be making the best decision for their players and for their league. And on top of the public health things that we've gotten into before, there's like a major economic benefit to coming up here. The Canadian dollar and things, you know, costing money in Canadian dollars instead of American dollars. You could absolutely understand why, you know, beyond, you know, the issues with COVID breakouts, that Canada would be a place that the NHL would want to come to. And another text in here from Duncan reacted to what we were talking about with maybe the Eastern Conference coming to Vancouver. He said that would be funny if the East came to Vancouver, all the flags on the cars rooting for the Leafs around town. And that's something to talk about. Like, would the Leafs have a home country advantage because of the number of Leaf fans there are around the country? And you could put this out to the Montreal Canadiens too. Whenever the Leafs and the Habs play in Vancouver, you know, you see tons of blue jerseys or red jerseys in the stands. It's not a home ice and hometown advantage, but you know that we would see lots of support around this city for the Leafs and the Habs if indeed the East were to come here.
And, you know, that's an interesting question. The other thing is, you know, we're all talking about, oh, would it be an advantage for the Canucks? The Canucks, this could last three games. That's, you know, that is on the table. It could be three and done against Minnesota, and then it would have nothing to do with the Canucks. And, you know, we don't know where a potential Stanley Cup Finals would be held, but let's say Vancouver's a hub city, and let's say they decide to do the Stanley Cup Final in Vancouver at Rogers Arena. I mean, you could be in a situation where the Leafs, or heaven forbid, the Bruins are playing for the Stanley Cup at Rogers Arena and have a chance to win the Stanley Cup at Rogers Arena. And at that point, I think you're going to have a lot of people sitting around Vancouver saying, wow, this backfired. This is not what I wanted at all.
Either that, or you'll have a lot of people around Vancouver, you know, buying, I don't know, let's say Vegas is playing Boston in the final. Suddenly, Vancouver is like Vegas North, right?
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
Everybody's got their Vegas Golden Knights gear. You know, they're standing out on the streets, watching the Bruins bus go past, booing them. Like, so as much as, you know, certainly the Canucks would benefit from a hometown situation, you know, there are lots of other factors too, especially if they're playing games in Canada where emotions are so tied to these rivalries, that would be a big factor of it as well. That, you know, if we're talking about the feel around the city playing an impact on how these games are played. And again, as we've talked about, that would be very minor, even if the Canucks are playing in their hometown. The fact that they know that the city's supporting them, well, they'll know the city's supporting them regardless of where they're playing. They understand what the game means here, but whether fans cheering against a particular team would have a similar impact will be interesting to see when we get to that point as well. It is time to set up Game of Takes, though. And Jordan from Saskatoon, Jordan Oxby, our defending champion from last week, knocking off Bailey Broadbent, has chosen the topic of analyzing Tyler Myers' first season with the Vancouver Canucks. So we're going to open it up to you. Again, you can text us 650-650. You can reach out on Twitter at Sportsnet650, at Jamie Dodd, at Batch Hockey. Let us know what you thought about Tyler Myers' first season with the Vancouver Canucks, and you could be chosen to go head-to-head with Jordan on Thursday and have a chance to join us on the show on Friday as a winner of Game of Takes, knock Jordan off the composite throne, and rule the realm yourself. So let's get into this a little bit here, Jamie. Tyler Myers' first season. And again, I do want to qualify that we're talking about his first season because I don't want this to turn into a relitigation of the contract. We all know that Tyler Myers is on the books for four more seasons at $6 million per. This is not about, you know, was it a good contract to sign? This is not about, you know, how is he going to look in year five of this deal? We're just looking back at his first year with the Vancouver Canucks and how he fit in and either helped or hindered this blue line, depending on what your opinion is on the matter. What did you take away from Tyler Myers' first season, albeit an abbreviated season because of the pandemic, here in Vancouver with the Canucks?
Well, for me, there's no doubt about it that he was a pleasant surprise. And yeah, I want to leave the contract out of it, but I'll admit I was worried, and I wasn't just worried about the length of the contract. You know, I was worried about Tyler Myers' performance in year one. And if you look at the role he played in Winnipeg, you know, yeah, he was about 20 minutes a game there, but also played a lot on the third pairing. And I had big concerns about whether he could move up in the lineup and still maintain an adequate level of play. And he's been able to do that. And frankly, I think if you look at everything that he's accomplished this year and how much he's meant to the blue line, I really don't see how you could view this as a disappointment, simply in the sense of, if you were expecting significantly more than this from Tyler Myers, you were always bound to be disappointed because he's just not that kind of player. But he has been he's been a legitimate asset to the team. And, you know, he's not going to blow you away with pure offensive production. He's at kind of a similar rate he's been at his entire career, where it's nice, it's good to have that from the back end, but that's, you know, he's not going to be among the league's elite at that level. But the thing that's impressed me about Tyler Myers is just his ability to transition the puck out of his own end, whether it's with a first pass or whether it's with his skating ability, which is very impressive at his size. That's something he's been very, very strong at consistently this year. You know, the problem with Tyler Myers, and I think the thing that gets a lot of fans maybe upset about his play, is the gaffes tend to be really noticeable. And I think part of that is just he's at 6'8". Part of it is that he does try to be a little more aggressive skating the puck out or with his passing. And, you know, when you play that aggressive game, occasionally it backfires. So the gaffes do tend to really stand out and look bad. But if you step back and you evaluate his play as a whole this year, there's no doubt about it. Then he's been a major positive for the Canucks blue line. I mean, just compare it to what they were running out there a year ago before they brought him into the fold. And I know it's a low bar to clear, but he has far surpassed that level of performance. He's been a quality number two pairing defenseman, and that's exactly where your expectations should have been coming into the season.
Yeah, and certainly the contract is going to play into the way people feel about Tyler Myers. There were preconceived notions built in about him before he ever stepped on the ice in a Canucks jersey. But, you know, this was an improved blue line this year. Was it improved enough? No. Let's be honest, this team has to get better on the back end if they want to be a true contender. But Tyler Myers did help them. And you're right, he had some ups and downs, and some of his mistakes were pretty glaring. But you look at some of the overall numbers at the end of the year, he finished third on the team in minutes, behind only Hughes and Edler. He was one of only three guys on the team to block over 100 shots, Edler and Tanev being the other two, and they're always right at the top of that list. And he had the second best Corsi amongst defensemen, behind only Quinn Hughes. And, you know, it seems pretty easy to say, oh, the Canucks blue line got better because Quinn Hughes came into the NHL, and Quinn Hughes is their best defenseman, and he single-handedly helped this blue line get better. And, you know, it is fair to say that Quinn Hughes is probably the greatest reason why this blue line has improved, but Tyler Myers, in my mind, does deserve some credit for the work he's done. It doesn't make the contract good. It doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be this player in year five of the deal, But just looking back at his first season, I don't see how you can argue anything other than him having helped this team. And I'm going to be interested to see some of the input from people both on the text line and on social media over the next few days.
Yeah, and I think the point about his possession numbers is really important, because that was, you know, I think everyone expected him to produce offensively like he has, which again is like a good, not great level, but there were real questions about, you know, his play in his own end and how much he could actually drive play. Well, he's been able to do that. To your point, being the second best defenseman in terms of possession numbers on the Canucks behind only Quinn Hughes, that's a legitimate accomplishment. And the other thing I've really liked about Tyler Myers and what he's added to this team is we've seen situations where the Canucks are trailing in the third period in particular, and Travis Green does not hesitate to say, okay, we need to generate some offense. So here it is. Quinn Hughes and Tyler Myers are going to get out there together. And when that has been the case, when the two of them have been on the ice together, they've been fantastic. And yes, obviously you contribute a lot of that to Quinn Hughes, but Quinn Hughes and Tyler Myers have better results than Quinn Hughes does with any other partner. So Tyler Myers is bringing something to that partnership as well when we do see it. And the ability to have a guy like that, who in the moments where you're like, hey, we really just need to get something going here, we really need to generate some offense, you can move him up the lineup a little bit and you know he's going to be able to have success. And then you can also play him in his normal role where you're not relying on him as much offensively in other situations. That's really valuable. And that's been something that's impressed me. And I could see situations where, you know, even at the beginning of a game, Travis Green could consider pairing the two of them just because they have had so much success when they've been on the ice together.
Well, and that's a really interesting point, too, because I think the assumption coming in was that Chris Tanev was going to be the de facto pairing defenseman with Quinn Hughes. He's, you know, the defensive conscience. He frees up Hughes to be more effective offensively. But at the same time, Tyler Myers and Quinn Hughes can both drive offense. And if you're driving offense, then you're not defending as much. And so, you know, this also ties into the conversation we've had around Chris Tanev about, you know, whether they re-sign him and bring him back. You know, to me, it at least now, and maybe by the end of the contract, it won't be the case, but at least now you could feel comfortable rolling out Quinn Hughes and Tyler Myers as your top pairing most nights, and you could move on from Chris Tanev. Now, you'd still need to find someone to fit into your top four to play with Alex Edler, but, you know, that is almost a luxury that Myers has brought to this group that, you know, while they would still have to replace Tanev with another top four defenseman, it's not as, you know, it wouldn't cause as much damage as it would have a year ago if you let Chris Tanev walk and don't bring him back.
No, you're absolutely right. And we've also, I think we've advanced a little bit. You know, there was the idea coming into the year where almost Quinn Hughes was going to need a babysitter on the ice almost. Okay, he's going to need Chris Tanev because, you know, he's a rookie and he'll get caught a little bit and he'll make mistakes and he needs Chris Tanev there to clean them up. And hey, I'm not taking any away from Chris Tanev because he's done a very good job of playing with Quinn Hughes. But we've also seen that I don't think Quinn Hughes does really need that security blanket with him. Like, he can play with another offensively minded guy, another guy who likes to take chances in Tyler Myers, and they can still be very successful. So I don't want to bury Chris Tanev or say he hasn't brought anything to that partnership with Quinn Hughes. But to your point, yeah, the Canucks have options now. They don't have to panic if they make the decision to let Chris Tanev walk, because you know, hey, at least Tyler Myers can hold down one of those spots on the right side in our top four. We know he can play well with Alex Edler. We know he can play well with Quinn Hughes. We have that piece that we can use as needed. And yeah, again, the contract, I don't like it. And there's a decent possibility in years 4 and 5 that it hurts them. At the same time, if you look at market price for a second pairing defenseman who, you know, when they signed him, I believe was 29, that's probably what you're going to pay. It is a very similar deal. So I don't think they necessarily overpaid. And right now they are getting the production that they paid for.
Yeah. And unsigned text here comes through saying Myers has been better than Pouliot, Gudbranson, and Spisa combined. Had a couple of bad giveaways, but has still improved the defense overall. And like you alluded to it earlier, that's a pretty low bar to climb over if you're Tyler Myers, with how bad the blue line had been over the last few years. But, you know, when you think back to some of those pairings that we saw when, you know, Delzato, Pouliot, Gudbranson, Spisa, all of these guys were playing on the back end. It makes you, I'm not saying it's a good contract, but I'm saying you can understand why Jim Benning felt it was important to maybe give up a little too much money and a little too much term to bring in a guy like Tyler Myers, just because you've seen the impact he's had on the blue line in the past year and how much better he is than all those guys that were playing on the blue line in the last few years.
Well, they needed NHL competence. That's what they needed on the blue line, and that's what guys like Gudbranson and Pouliot and Spezza were just simply not providing. They needed to find that if they were going to take a step forward this year. And again, I'm not even sure that you can say they overpaid when you look at, you know, free agency is expensive. You don't get a lot of bargains on top four defensemen in free agency. You got to play to bring them to your city. Again, that doesn't mean it's a good contract. That doesn't mean it's going to look great in a couple of years' time. But it's very understandable, as you said, they just had to bring in someone to help stabilize that blue line. And the price they paid for Tyler Myers, it looks a lot better now, certainly, than it did on July 1st last year.
Yeah, but at the same time, here's another text comes in again from Duncan, who says, Quinn makes other players look good, just like Bobby Orr. Now, you know, the Bobby Orr comparison, it might be a little too early to make that point. But, you know, there could be some credence to the argument out there. And, you know, I imagine we'll see some people make it this week to try and get in on Game of Takes, that Tyler Myers isn't as good as he appeared. It was only when he was playing with Quinn Hughes that those numbers were elevated. And that's due to Quinn Hughes rather than to Tyler Myers.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me, because as I said, Quinn Hughes saw his best results with Tyler Myers as well. So it's not as if, you know, obviously Quinn Hughes was effective no matter what situation he was in. But again, the best results came with Tyler Myers. So yeah, Myers was bringing something to the table. Of course, it's easy to have good numbers and it's easier to look good when you're playing alongside Quinn Hughes. But that doesn't mean, you know, if it was Eric Gudbranson there, it would have looked a lot different than it did with Tyler Myers. So I understand the argument, but you can't completely discount Tyler Myers' contributions just because he was playing with Quinn Hughes.
So that is our topic for Game of Takes this week. We invite your text 650-650 or reach out on Twitter at Batch Hockey, at Jamie Dodd, at Sportsnet 650. Let us know what you thought of Tyler Myers' first season for a chance to go up against Jordan on Thursday. Jamie, I'm done for the day. You're sticking around. You're filling in for Randeep Janda this week on Reach Deep. So you and Dan Riccio coming up in just a few moments. We'll have Chris Johnston on the program at 3 o'clock, as well as Password as well at 2:45, and plenty of good stuff coming up for you guys this afternoon. That is next. Reach Deep in a matter of moments on Sportsnet 650, the official home of the Vancouver Canucks.